Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1997. The New World Order.
Hello. We've discussed many topics on these American Dissident Voices programs. We've talked about social issues, moral issues, political issues. We've talked about race and about nationalism and about the Jewish control of the news and entertainment media and about many other things. Today I'll talk about the big picture. I'll talk in broad outline about the salient developments of the past few years and the way in which they affect our people. There's been much talk in various quarters recently about the New World Order. Until 7 or 8 years ago, the New World Order was a poorly kept secret. It was discussed in private by the people who considered themselves qualified to decide for all the rest of us what sort of world we wanted to live in, but they didn't often let us in on their discussions. They were concerned that in our backwardness and ignorance, we might not want to go along for the ride if we learned what these elitists had planned for us. Nowadays, however, with Bill Clinton in the White House and the general public dancing mindlessly to whatever tune is played by the mass media, they are much less concerned that the hoi polloi will be able to upset their apple cart. And so the New World Order is discussed within earshot of us commoners as a matter of course. Despite this general familiarity with the term, however, there is very little real understanding on the part of most people of the concept of a New World Order. And there is even less understanding of the real motivations behind this concept and of their historical development. I'll try to remedy this lack of understanding, at least in some small part, during the next few minutes. Let's look at the history of the New World Order concept first. The idea of a world government certainly isn't new, of course. The Roman Empire achieved a world government to a large extent 2,000 years ago. And during the Middle Ages, the Christian Church constituted a universal order of sorts, despite the schism between its Western or Roman branch and its Eastern or Greek branch. In modern times, the idea has appealed to several groups of people. In the first place, there are the amoral, super wealthy elements, cosmopolitan and raceless individuals who already wield a great deal of power through their wealth and like to flatter themselves with the thought that they deserve even more power over the lives of the rest of us. Actually, in many cases, there's more than self-flattery involved. Many of these men are involved in giant multinational business enterprises, and they see more profit for themselves in the conversion of the world into a sort of global plantation, with themselves in the role of owners and overseers, and the rest of us as their serfs. These cosmopolitan big business elements are the elements that most of the unsophisticated opponents of the New World Order think about. Often these unsophisticated opponents simply rail against the international bankers and attribute to them the dominant role in New World Order scheming. At least as important as these super wealthy big business elements, however, and vastly more numerous, are those who support the New World Order for reasons of ideology or fashion. The idea of a world government has had a trendy sort of appeal among leftist academics and clerics, as well as among a number of shallow intellectuals influenced by the former and Christians influenced by the latter. Bill and Hillary Clinton, as well as many of their friends and associates, are among the former. The New World Order has been fashionable among the crowd they have run with since high school, And these people are nothing if not fashion conscious. They are people who would rather be torn apart by wild horses than be caught with an unfashionable idea in their heads. Many of the Christian supporters of the New World Order are tormented by feelings of white racial guilt or of misplaced compassion for the non-white hordes of the world. They see the New World Order as a way to equalize the world racially by redistributing the world's wealth and to punish the whites by bringing them down to the level of the non-whites. Also among the ideological boosters of the New World Order are those who claim to see greater security for everyone under a world government, or who are simply attracted by the concept of a more orderly world under centralized control. Since the early part of this century, groups such as the Council on Foreign Relations have been working behind the scenes on the political and the academic fronts to promote the idea of a new world order. These people argue that with weapons of mass destruction, such as nuclear bombs, on the loose, the only way for humanity to be safe is under a world government. Only through the establishment of a new world order, they assert, can we hope to eliminate war and its associated evils. Yet these same intellectuals were hotter than anyone else to unleash the Second World War, the most destructive and murderous war ever inflicted on the world, and to develop and use nuclear weapons in that war. Their conspiring and their behind-the-scenes maneuvering succeeded in turning a regional conflict in Eastern Europe, primarily between Germany and the Soviet Union, into a global campaign to destroy Germany and save the Soviet Union. Their great disappointment was that the war in Europe ended too soon for them to use nuclear weapons against Germany. Despite their professed abhorrence of war, they are all too ready to resort to it in order to prevent what they consider the wrong sort of New World Order, or even the wrong sort of New European Order. And this brings us to a third element, and the most important element, among the proponents of the New World Order. This is the Jewish element. Anyone who reads the Old Testament with eyes not blinded by Christian piety cannot miss its central message. The Jews are a special people who are morally superior to the other peoples of the earth, a chosen people, chosen by their tribal deity to inherit the earth and all its riches, and to be served by non-Jews. Isaiah, for example, spells out this message clearly and explicitly. Orthodox religious Jews believe it literally. Even atheistic Jews believe it, in a sense. They believe that they are smarter, more resourceful, and better organized than non-Jews, and so deserve to exploit them and rule over them. And at least as far as being better organized, they certainly are correct. They have 10 times as many organizations per capita to represent their interests as any other race or ethnic group. Some of these are strictly internal, educational, or cultural organizations aimed at maintaining Jewish cohesiveness and the Jewish sense of identity. Others are aimed at exerting pressure or influence on the Gentile majorities around them. Some of these latter organizations, such as the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, are quite powerful and have Gentile politicians dancing to their tune. And in a collective sense, the Jews may be justified in thinking that they are smarter, which is to say that they have developed a collective strategy for survival and self-advancement, which so far has been extraordinarily successful. Central to this strategy is the maintenance of a sense of grievance against the non-Jewish world, a sense that Jews not only must stick together, but that they are justified in using deceit and any other tactic in their dealings with the Gentiles, because the Gentiles are out to destroy them. Certainly no other race celebrates its alleged persecutions the way the Jews do theirs. In their annual Purim festival, for example, they still nurse a 2,500-year-old grievance against the ancient Persians. More than anything else, however, it is the Jews' control of the news and entertainment media which gives them their immense power. And for more than 50 years, they have consistently used their media power to advance the schemes of the New World Order gang. Clearly, the Jews see a dominant role for themselves in a world government because of the power they already wield. Beyond this, with their highly leveraged situation, that is, their need to maintain their control over numerically much larger Gentile populations everywhere, increasing centralization of governmental power is the only strategy which makes sense for them. They have a tiger by the tail, and they dare not let go. Their great fear is that a strong and genuinely patriotic leader may arise in some nation, another Adolf Hitler, and he will succeed in breaking the Jewish control over his people and ending Jewish power in his nation. If that is permitted to happen in any major nation, it may spread quickly to other nations. That is why they pulled out all the stops to destroy Germany during the Second World War. And, if they were not already convinced, the Second World War redoubled their conviction that they must make every nation subordinate to a world government under their control. What the Jews and the other New World Order schemers have in mind goes far, far beyond the United Nations organization that they created at the end of the Second World War. The UN has been moderately successful at bullying small countries into line with the threat of the so-called peacekeeping forces which they employ, but it has no power at all over large nations. The Jews want a final end to the possibility of the resurgence of any nationalism, except their own, of course. They want to eliminate forever the possibility that the people of Russia, or the United States, or Germany, or Britain, or any other country except Israel will act of their own will. The total elimination of national sovereignty is in accord with the interests of the non-Jewish New World Order schemers as well. The whole idea of patriotism has been in bad odor with the leftist academics and their semi-intellectual hangers-on for a long time. Patriotism is an alien concept to them. They are instinctively hostile to patriots. Bill Clinton, who demonstrated against his own country during the Vietnam War, provides an excellent example of this mindset. And patriotism also is contrary to the universalist ideas of the Christian clerics backing the New World Order. Finally, the international capitalists also are hostile to national sovereignty. They want a truly global plantation with a global labor pool for them to exploit and a global market for them to milk. National boundaries and any tendencies toward protecting national interests just get in their way and cut into their profits. So now we can begin to understand some of the things which have been happening to us during the past few decades in terms of these goals of the New World Order schemers. For example, the refusal of the United States government to control our borders. We have millions of illegal aliens in the United States and hundreds of thousands more entering the country every year. Stopping the flow of illegal aliens across our borders and deporting the illegals already here, would be a trivially easy thing for the United States government to do. It would cost far less money than is spent each year in providing various social and medical services to these illegal aliens now. Any military or police operations involved could be integrated with training programs and could provide valuable experience for military and police personnel. But the federal government has consistently refused to take any effective action to halt illegal immigration. They have simply play-acted in this regard, spending a tiny amount of money to beef up a security fence along the Mexican border in one area and leaving the border unguarded in another area. In response to public outrage by citizens in border areas who demand action by the government, a few dozen more Border Patrol agents will be hired, or some other action will be taken to make it seem that the government wants to control the borders. But every action taken is deliberately ineffective, and I mean deliberately. The truth of the matter is that the New World Order people ultimately aim to create a new world population of serfs for their global plantation, a homogeneous population of coffee-colored serfs, a population of docile and predictable and interchangeable serfs, and they definitely don't want any large reservoir of white people anywhere who might rebel. So from the point of view of the New World Order planners, the more Mexicans and Haitians and Vietnamese who pour into the United States, the better. But they are not ready yet to announce publicly that their aim is to destroy the racial character of the U.S. population. So when the citizens squawk too loudly about illegal aliens, the government puts on a pretense of doing something about the problem. What they want to do is keep the illegals coming in while they continue to enforce their racial mixing and their anti-discrimination laws. Their aim is to homogenize the population and destroy its white character gradually without provoking an uprising. Or consider Bill Clinton's current campaign to have more legislation enacted against so-called hate crimes. This may score a few votes from black, homosexual, and feminist voters for the Democrats. But the Democrats were getting all of those votes anyway. As I have explained in other broadcasts, Mr. Clinton's campaign to outlaw hate makes very little sense if it is taken at face value. It is understandable only in the context of a much larger campaign to scrap the Bill of Rights. In fact, what we see when we look closely at the principal backers of the New World Order and at the people who have been loudest in their demands for curbs on First Amendment rights, in their demands for the elimination of all Second Amendment rights, and in their calls for governmental behavior contrary to the Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments as well, all in the name of increasing public security. What we see is that these are the same people. The people who want to outlaw what they call hate speech, the people who want to confiscate all private firearms, the people who believe that political correctness should take precedence over the right to due process and a speedy trial, to freedom from double jeopardy and from being compelled to testify against oneself and from unlawful search and seizure. All these people are fervent promoters of the New World Order. And all of the people who have been scheming for the New World Order understand that the one thing which could upset their apple cart is a rebellion by white patriots. And they're determined to have the government tighten its grip on the people in order to prevent a rebellion from taking place. Now, I apologize for not having enough time to present more details today, for not carefully documenting everything I've said today with plenty of evidence. But you know, I've done that on other American Dissident Voices broadcasts. On one broadcast or another, I've documented everything I've said today. I wanted to put it all together for you today, to give you the big picture in broad outline. Now, I'll tell you what it means for our future. It means, first and foremost, that the government's assault on our freedom will not abate. Instead, it will become more intense, more vicious, more reckless. The government lawlessness that we saw at Ruby Ridge and at Waco will intensify. The government is irrevocably committed to repressing dissent, to stifling opposition, to intimidating its critics, and to locking up or killing everyone who cannot be intimidated. The New World Order schemers are absolutely determined to have their way. They have been able to go a long way toward their goal by using subterfuge and deceit. But ultimately, the transformation of a world of independent nations into the global plantation they are aiming at will involve changes so profound and so traumatic that subterfuge and deceit will not be enough to keep the serfs under control. They will need raw police power applied KGB style. They have to develop that power and begin using it now. They must silence their critics. They're a pretty bold and arrogant bunch of schemers, but they understand that according to the old way of looking at things, according to our way, they are traitors. They understand that if the general public ever gets a real inkling of what they are up to, if they ever lose their grip on the situation, they'll all end up hanging from lampposts. What they are planning is so monstrous, so evil, that the thought of being brought to account for it frightens them. And in their fear, they will resort to every means at their disposal to protect themselves and their scheme. And, my friends, we will resort to every means at our disposal to ensure that their scheme does not succeed and that they do indeed end up hanging from lampposts. I am counting on your help. Thanks for being with me again today.